It's Sunday edition on TalkSport with Sean Custis and Henry Winter. And for the last half hour, we are joined by Kevin McCabe, the former Sheffield United owner. Good morning, Kevin.
Yeah, good morning to you both.
Morning, Kevin.
Nice to see you again, Henry.
Yeah, good to hear you, Kevin. You enjoyed the book. I read it yesterday. Absolutely fascinating.
Kevin, thanks. I mean, to say you had an eventful time at Sheffield United would be an understatement. You went in, it was a fan who wanted the best for the club. By the time you left it, there was a bust up with Prince Abdullah. You're the subject of a biography, which Henry refers to, called Mucky Boots, which chronicles your life. How do you look back on your time in charge?
Well, I suppose you look back and say it was quite a roller coaster of nigh on 25 years of being the boss at the Blades.
So tell me, when you went into it, you talk, I think, about you're a big Sheffield United fan. You presumably, when you start, you go in it because you love the club and you want to make them better.
Yeah, sure. I mean, born round the corner from Bramall Lane, I couldn't help to be anything but a Sheffield United supporter from a very early age. And albeit my career saw me move away from Sheffield in the early 70s, I never stopped supporting the Blades. And when able, I'd go and watch the Blades. And it's still the same today. You know, you can't sort of desert a club if you're a genuine supporter, irrespective of what may have happened in between.
Kevin, one of the many things that comes out of the book is your absolute delight when Sheffield Wednesday don't do so badly. There's one line, it still gives me pleasure to see Sheffield Wednesday fail. Even though you've been a fan of Sheffield United for, 60-odd years, it's still longer. I mean, it's almost like defined. Well, not defined, because it's obviously about your love of Sheffield United, but your just desire to see Sheffield Wednesday lose.
Look, it's the way it is today. You get Rangers and Celtic playing, and I'm sure the same words be uttered by a Celtic supporter towards Rangers and vice versa. So, you know, Wednesday's always been the enemy as a Blades lad through and through, and will remain so. I may say I've got some great chums who are Wednesdayites who torment and tease myself as I do to them. So there's a lot of goodwill involved, but if it's the second result I look for, it's the Owls after I've seen what's happened to the Blades.
So if United had lost, would you then go, oh, I wonder if Sheffield Wednesday got on? And if they've lost, you think, oh, phew, all's right with the world now.
Maybe not quite as intense as you mentioned in there, Sean, but I keep an eye on it, put it that way, and it can be a spate of me dropping a note to my Wednesday pals or vice versa, having to take some knocks on the chin myself. It's a friendliness between two clubs in a big English city that have always been around, so and it will continue thereafter, long since my ownership of the Blades. No different.
Kevin, just you list, the book lists your expenditure during your time, during your tenure. £53 million on infrastructure, £54 million on the football team and associated costs. I mean, that is, £100 plus million that you spent on the club. What's it been more emotionally draining or financially draining?
Probably a bit of both. Because of my sort of background also in real estate and construction, when I sort of first joined the board in the mid-90s, it was, in my own mind, with a clear plan of action. The Blades, up until 73, had always been a three-sided ground because it was also the home of Yorkshire County Cricket Club. It always, even as a kid going with my father, it was looked upon as the second ground in Sheffield, not the first. Wednesday had the good fortune of receiving funds to improve Hillsborough for the 1966 World Cup. Yes, it was a bigger stadium and a better stadium whilst we were still in a three-sided ground. So I knew in my own mind, to make a real impact for Sheffield United, I wanted Bramall Lane, the world's oldest professional football stadium, to become ever better than Hillsborough. And that was always one of my priorities of working at that. In tandem, of course, when you've got ownership, of never losing sight of the importance of the first-team football. And I wanted the Blades to have better facilities than our competitors.
And you did a lot of work towards doing that. But Kevin, you will be forever associated with the Carlos Tevez dramas of 2007. If we can explain to the listeners who maybe don't know, Carlos Tevez scored a goal for West Ham at Man United, which kept West Ham up. Sheffield United went down after losing against Wigan, where your old boy David Bunsworth scored. I remember it well. I was at the game. But the controversy was that Tevez had joined West Ham under third-party ownership, which essentially meant he was owned by an entity, in this case Keir Jarabchin and his consortium, and not by the club, and that was against FA rules. So you started a legal action against them, and everybody thought for a lot of the time, give it up, Kevin, you're never going to get compensation for this. You've got relegated, I'll never turn around. And you stuck with it, and you stuck with it, and eventually you got your just rewards. Tell us all about the saga.
Well, just let me say, we never got the just rewards. The just
rewards. Got some rewards.
Would have been maintaining our position in the Premier League then, and a position we'd worked hard to achieve in years previous in building up to get promotion. So if I look back at my career at Sheffield United, the Carlos Tevez affair is one that hurts the most. It was improper. You could say it was illegal that West Ham, who are a great club, so it's not really the club, it's what the owners were able to manoeuvre in bringing on board two, not just Carlos Tevez, but Xavier.
Mascherano, yeah.
Two world-class players, illegally. You know, they were sort of owned by a third-party agent, which was strictly prohibitive in football, in Premier League football in particular. And they got away with it until sort of the tribunal Premier League versus West Ham was held in January of the season that we ended up going down. They got away with it, with the Premier League making no effort to appeal to the tribunal panel to deduct points, which was always known amongst chat amongst football people, club to club, that West Ham were going to be deducted points. So the tribunal in January, whether the outcome of it didn't arrive until April, there was always a knowledge that West Ham were in more trouble than you could believe. It was a massive shock when just prior to, I don't know, 5 or 6 games before the end of the season, at the makeup of the conclusion for the tribunal, they decided, the panel had decided, encouraged by the Premier League, not to deduct points, but just to fine West Ham.
But of course, you could ultimately have saved yourselves in that final game. I was referring to the Sheffield United Wigan game when David Unsworth, who'd played for you and actually missed a penalty for you during that season, actually scored the winner for Wigan. Had you not lost that game, you would have stayed up. Or had you won that game, you would have stayed up. So to a certain extent, it was still in your own hands right at the end. I remember the press conference by Neil Warnock after the game, and he went on and on about the West Ham thing. But you could have done it yourselves. You could have stayed up.
Well, of course we could, but, and the but bit really is, what are the rules of the game here? And the rules of the game is that one club, only one club, West Ham United, in the acquisition of two players owned by a third party, had breached the rules. And the normality for that was punishment by way of deduction of points. So the Football League and the Premier League are all about 3 points for a win, one for a draw, and nil if you lose. It's not a knockout competition. It's played over 9 months, and in those days, probably at, what was it, 46 games in the Premier League. It's all about points. And therefore, any fine for illegally bringing on board two world-class players, but particularly Carlos Tevez, has to be sort of dealt with by deducting points for foul play. And that was always what was talked about in the football circles, and that didn't happen. So yes, of course, we lost on the final day of the season to Wigan, and so that allowed them to stay up, you know. And for some reason, because of the frailties of the legislation by the Premier League, we didn't survive. We got relegated, quite immorally, if not illegally.
Kevin, you describe it as probably the biggest injustice since the sport of football began. Just on a very human side, how many staff lost their jobs because of the Tevez decision?
And I wouldn't be able to give you a precise number, Henry, but I suspect 50 to 70.
Wow, as many as that. God.
Yeah, I mean, if it was the same thing were to happen today, it would be more, wouldn't it? Because clubs are much more sort of extended in terms of facilities they have out with the stadium, which is the case with United. As you know, we had a top class academy and first team training facilities, the first ever in the history of the Blades. So a lot of people lost their jobs, you're quite right, and we had to rebuild again. And if I look back with the curse, it took me 12 years since that illegal, immoral relegation to get the Blades back into the Premier League. 12 years. In that 12 years, West Ham played 11 of them in the Premiership. If you look at it that way, this is a sport. Of course, points should have been deducted. United's relegation should never have happened, but it did.
Do you think there's a pecking order in football? And there was almost like a snobbery is probably too strong a word, but they looked at Sheffield United and they looked at West Ham and they just looked on it with a sort of southern-centric bias. And they just thought, oh, well, Sheffield United, they'll soak it up.
It's a difficult question to answer. What I do say is that West Ham, who may say a great club, that's in the south of England. West Ham, Chelsea, get the bigger ones in Tottenham and Arsenal. Maybe there's a and most of the important meetings in football are held in the south of England, in the London territory. So maybe there's a more discussions across the table or over a beer about the London or the bigger clubs, the Man U's and Cities and Liverpool's, etc., than there are about the what I loosely term yo-yo clubs, which could be United, could be a Wednesday, could be a Leicester City, indeed, could be a West Ham United. So, maybe they get a privileged position, not for any reasons that are deliberate, but just the way it is. It is Trevor Brooking, it is Sir Geoff Hurst, Martin Peters, and Bobby Moore. And I don't forget that. So the impact of a West Ham name as against a Sheffield United name, it's far bigger.
Even now, 17 years on, Kevin, you still sound quite bitter about it.
Well, if I look at the Moraine, it was totally unjust. I can't change my words on that. It should not have happened. It's the powers that be that permitted it to happen. That was totally improper. We were playing that season to stay up. It was part of our sort of profile. And if our success over that season, which should have been a success by retaining our Premier League status, it didn't happen. Not because of the efforts put in by the first team and Neil Warnock at the helm, by a very unjust Premier League in the way they conducted their dispute with West Ham.
This is the Sunday edition with me, Sean Custis, and Henry Winter. And Kevin is staying with us, and we'll chat more football ownership and the state of the Prem and EFL after the break. It's Sunday edition with Sean Custis and Henry Winter with you till 11 o'clock. And our special guest is Kevin McCabe, the former Sheffield United owner. And Kevin, you may have been a bit of a trailblazer because as owner of Sheffield United, you had this tie-up in China and you formed the Chengdu Blades. And of course, now loads of clubs do multi-club ownership, but I think you may well have been the first.
Oh, God, I mean, I wouldn't... I don't know whether that's the true position, Sean, but yeah, because we were doing business in China on the real estate side, and if the Chinese were... Certainly are, sorry, were or are football mad. If therefore they find out of your association with football, I myself and the Blades, you seem to get more and more people at very much government level wanting to meet you. That's really what happened at Chengdu.
So there was a vested interest in it, was there?
Well, we did an awful lot for Chengdu, I may say, in sort of copycatting what we'd done at Sheffield United, and not just the stadium, but having a fine academy to bring people through, and also creating an association between the city of Sheffield and the city of Chengdu. We twinned both cities, which is not unusual that occurs around business for many cities from one country to another. And I did take our MP at the time, Clive Betts, who was a Wednesday, I may say, he came to China with me to take over that role of the twinning of the cities. I had a sort of not dissimilar situation in Australia, where I did business, where, again, because of the football background, other people came to talk to me about football, and we struck up an affiliation where I had a shareholding in an Aussie club as well. And that's maybe, did you use Trailblazers? I mean, that's happened with certainly Man City, the way they've done it in a mega, mega way, you know, in, certainly in Australia and other territories.
Kevin, have you... Sorry, Kevin, just of your many successes at Sheffield United, the academy must give you great pride. I mean, I can remember one, I think it was an England tournament squad that had Kyle Walker, Ramsdale Maguire and Calvert-Lewin in it. That was something that meant a lot to you. Was that because you were a local lad and it meant a lot to you that the academy produced talent for the first team?
Absolutely. You know, getting involved in United and realising that where they trained was the Abbeydale Grange School facilities, it was a frustration saying this ain't 21st century football. Getting United knocked into shape meant we should have our own proper training facilities, not just for first team, but also for those youngsters, including ladies. We had, you know, probably at one time we had 100 lads and 100 lasses who were part of the academy. So, yeah, I took great pride in buying this 20-acre site and creating what is the academy today, with plans for more. We had a junior academy as well, separate to the senior academy.
I mentioned at the start...
Every bit of part of modern football.
Indeed, and you built up a lot of good stuff at Sheffield United. And I mentioned at the start that ultimately you fell out with Prince Abdullah, who you'd done a deal with to part-own Sheffield United, and then you almost accepted that he was going to take over eventually, but then... He didn't. You had a bitter fallout. It went to court. What went wrong?
What went wrong, I'd say, was a contract produced by our lawyers that sort of let me down. It shouldn't have done. What went wrong was in no shape or form did we, the McCabe Sheffield United, do anything wrong. We acted purely to accord to an agreement that was between Abdullah's company and mine.
You suggested that in your book that the judge who ruled in Prince Abdullah's favour, you said to Tim Fancourt, preferred a Saudi royal prince to a working class lad from Sharrow. Do you think, again, coming back to that sort of, almost like that sort of West Ham, Sheffield United issue, do you feel there was an element of class in it?
Look, Matt, we're talking about people who are involved in the legal profession. And what I was really saying about Judge Fancourt, he sort of contrived from a very clear contract, which you should take a look at, and you'd think, well, how the hell did this happen? From a very clear contract, he contrived to change it in looking at ways of making out as if we'd done something wrong when we hadn't. We'd adhered to the contract. He then in his summing up, tried to make out that I'd been the bad guy, when the only person who did any cheating in respect of the contract, legal contract, was Prince Abdullah. So there's no grey area there.
When you now look at Sheffield United, maybe, I don't know, but from a bit of a distance, do you regret that you had to leave? Would you still like to be in charge?
It was certainly the way things panned out. To leave Sheffield United as I did was a disgrace. You know, I think it was wrong and improper, and that was conducted by the decision made by Justice Fancourt.
But you still go to games now?
I've been to one game only since departing Sheffield United. But please bear in mind, you talked to me this morning, where my home is, in Scarborough. So any home game for Sheffield United is a four-hour journey there and back. So, you know, time passing means that travelling a distance to watch the Blades is less than it used to be.
You've had some quite a few characters as managers. I mean, when you had Chris Wilder, and I think one of his first signs of his brilliant team building was giving, you had one sort of a difficult result and everyone was on the coach coming back and you gave £100 to Billy Sharp to get the beers in when the coach pulled up outside an off licence. There was a... So just give us an insight into Chris Wilder, because you obviously got on with him.
Well, I didn't really know Chris. I'd seen him, obviously, as a player for him when Dave Bassett was the manager, and certainly knew he was a Sheffield lad through and through. And it was perchance that I'd actually come up from London to staying at the hotel we developed at Bramall Lane to see Nigel Atkins the following morning because, you know, I thought it was when we needed to change managers then. We were stuck in League One. And Chris was at the bar. We've always been a generous club in Sheffield, not just in my era, but before, in allowing Bramall Lane Stadium to be used for end-of-season matches for local football clubs. So Chris had come to watch, I don't know, the Red Lion versus the Green Horse, so to speak. He was at the bar, and I went across to say hi to him, and I think we just had a quick beer before he then went out to watch the game, some of his mates playing. And during that discussion, I said, well, let me have your number, Chris. It was said idly. And it was then of sitting back, I think, having a beer on my own at the hotel, that thinking, well, we've got to find a new manager. When I've spoken to Nigel and sorted out the next move, I might get hold of this Chris Wilder guy. He's done so well, did so well at Oxford, done amazingly well at Northampton. So the following morning, firstly, I gave Chris a buzz to say, look, would you be interested in coming for an interview? His response was an enthusiastic, yes, yes, but you need to speak to the Northampton Town chairman first. So I spoke to the chairman of Northampton Town, really, and it was he wanted to say, well, I'm happy so you meet Chris, but if you do decide to sign him, you'll have to pay compensation. So we sort of then said, what sort of level? And we talked about the level, and that there was an agreement in principle. And that's what made me then get Chris down to our London office and to meet myself and one of my sons and one of my other co-directors. And that's how he ended up being a Sheffield United manager and did a fantastic job.
So just quickly then, Kevin, is he your favourite Sheffield United boss? Does Warnock beat it? What's the hierarchy of bosses that you had?
You've got to define favourite. Look, Neil and I, I've got great respect for him. You know, in other words, I'll always say the right things for Neil Warnock. His promotion proves it. Is he my best friend? Am I his best friend? Not really, but he used to live in Scarborough as well. Mm. So we knew each other quite well enough in Scarborough and sort of had times out with kids, his growing kids. So there shouldn't be really any real problem with him. And he was well looked after at Bramall Lane, and he did a superb job. I mean, to get us back into that, into the Premier League, gets back to the Tevez affair again. What we achieved as a club, thanks to Neil as first team manager, was taken away from us. But so, yeah, and Chris Wilder, a nice bloke through and through, Sheffield through and through, full of energy, full of verve. He's got a good instinct for football and footballers. Rebuilt our team very quickly. So two good managers, W and W.
Would you like to own the club again?
There's a time in life when you say no. And that is for me. You know, I'm in my sort of 77th year, so I'm a bit too old to wish to take over the club again.
Kevin, we wish you all the best for the future. Hope you can still get round to watching the Blades and enjoy it and maybe put 2007 behind you, I hope. Kevin's biography, Mucky Boots, is coming out now. Thank you, Kevin.